Welcome to The Bridge, a weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgane, your host for the show. Most regular users of marijuana in Washington State will not be changing their sources of supply even after new and legal retail outlets open sometime next year. A study released yesterday provides insight about the emerging legal pot market. And federal officials are concerned that the legalization of pot in Washington may cause an uptick of unregulated sales in neighboring states. Austin Jenkins has those stories coming right up. Later in the show, Joel Karras from Food Roots will talk about a new project to support current and future local farming and food production. It's called North Coast Grown, and they're closing in on the final phase of funding for the $240,000 project with a crowdfunding drive that, as of last night, has only about $3,500 left to raise. And in just a few minutes, two Astoria High School students will tell us about Hearts for Hospice and how they're helping with a fundraising project in which you can dedicate a handmade heart holiday ornament to honor or remember a loved one and help a Clatsop County neighbor in need. That's all coming right up on The Bridge. You're listening to The Bridge here on Coast Community Radio. In top stories this morning, the amount of marijuana smoked, eaten, or otherwise consumed in Washington each year is double the original projections. That's according to a long-awaited study released yesterday from the RAND Corporation. The findings come as Washington prepares to license hundreds of new marijuana businesses. Olympia correspondent Austin Jenkins reports.
If there is such a thing, the typical pot smoker in Washington is a white male, 35 or younger, with some college education, and he smokes a lot more weed than anyone thought. That's the composite that emerges from the RAND Corporation's report titled Before the Grand Opening, a reference to Washington's new pot marketplace set to open next year. The study's lead author is Bo Kilmer. He says RAND's estimate this year, before any pot stores open, is Washingtonians will consume about 175 metric tons of marijuana.
And if you think about that in terms of half-gram joints, that'd be about 350 million joints.
The RAND study also concludes that 80% of that pot is consumed by just 20% of the users. Washington's Liquor Control Board previously decided to limit production to 80 metric tons a year. This study won't change that. The assumption is regulated retail stores will only capture about a quarter of the marijuana market in the first year. I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
A top priority of the U.S. Justice Department as Washington moves to legalize recreational pot is preventing leakage to other states like Oregon and Idaho. Barcodes will help the state track marijuana from seed to sale, but technology alone won't keep Washington pot in Washington. And as Austin Jenkins found, some think the concern about leakage is overblown.
Here was Governor Jay Inslee last August pledging to enact a disciplined and regulated legal recreational marijuana marketplace.
So we're not going to allow distribution of this product in a way that has massive leakage outside the state of Washington.
With that in mind, Washington's Liquor Control Board has adopted strict traceability rules for marijuana businesses, and the rules say licensees must track marijuana from seed to sale and report much of that information back to the state. And this is where a Florida-based company called BioTrack THC comes in.
Every single plant within your production facility will be assigned its own unique 16-digit non-repeatable barcode number.
This is BioTrack THC's director of marketing, Anthony Stevens, in a recent webinar now posted to YouTube. The company was selected by the Liquor Control Board to customize a tracing system that will allow the state to monitor and track any marijuana plant at any time. Now, BioTrack THC wouldn't talk about its work for the state, but the company is already marketing its off-the-shelf tracking software to would-be marijuana licensees in Washington.
You know, people always ask me, so Anthony, are you telling me that if an employee steals from me, I can find out on this report? Well, actually, yeah, you definitely could.
But will it be that simple for the state? Colorado had grand plans for a seed-to-sale monitoring system of medical marijuana, But an audit earlier this year found that wasn't happening, largely because of a lack of money to do the oversight. In Washington, Liquor Board Deputy Director Randy Simmons says his agency will get $5 million a year to administer the state's new marijuana law.
Fortunately, the initiative writers gave us money to actually run the oversight of this business. Did not happen in Colorado. So I think we're way ahead of where Colorado is.
Simmons says the software system will be built to look for red flags, but it's going to take investigators with real expertise to effectively analyze those red flags. That's according to Alex Cooley with Solstice Co-op, a medical marijuana provider that already tracks its product from seed to sale.
The people that they hire to do this inspection and enforcement need to be very intelligent and capable of easily determining if a license holder is being dishonest with them.
But is all this time and money and effort to prevent leakage really necessary? Washington's former pot consultant, Mark Kleiman of UCLA, is skeptical.
I think the tracking system is not a very good solution to mostly a non-problem.
A non-problem? Kleiman predicts the marijuana that leaves Washington borders will be the black market variety, not the stuff that's regulated and taxed.
I mean, everybody's fixated on whether the legal system leaks, and I understand that concern, but I just doubt that's going to be the major source of exports.
Randy Simmons at the Liquor Board tends to agree, but he says the state has to play it safe. After all, marijuana is still considered a Schedule I narcotic by the feds.
And I think to get the buy-in from Department of Justice that we needed and wanted, traceability system was part of that.
Even if leakage isn't a big problem to start, it could be down the road as the black market shrinks and the price of legal pot comes down. Then there might be a financial incentive to let some product leak to other states. I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
It's 6 days until Christmas. This time of year, we gather with family and friends, and we reach out to connect with and help others in our community. This morning, Naomi Kane and Jake Jones are here in the studio. They're Astoria High School seniors working on a project to raise awareness of an important program in our community, Lower Columbia Hospice. Good morning, Jake and Naomi.
Good morning.
Jake, will you explain what hospice is, what it's all about, and how it works?
Well, Lower Columbia Hospice is a department of Columbia Memorial Hospital that provides care to patients going through the terminal stages of life throughout Clatsop County, as well as any needed care given to the family of that patient that is experiencing the stages that happens when a family member or a loved one or a friend is going through the terminal stages of life. And it provides therapy, care, comfort, and anything that a patient or a patient's family would need through those tough stages of life.
And care can be in a hospital setting or in a care facility or even at home?
Yes, patients can receive care in the hospital, or nurses are actually able to go to their house throughout Clatsop County and provide care in their own home.
And Naomi, this is what you two are doing is part of a senior project. And could you explain what a senior project is?
Yeah, a senior project is done by seniors at Astoria High School. It's a community service project, and it requires that students complete 20 hours of community service. And after that's completed, then they make a presentation, they reflect on their project, and they present to a board. But yeah, it's a great thing.
And what drew you to hospice to help out with your senior project?
Well, I'd never really known about hospice before I learned about this project, and once I did, I realized that there's probably a lot of other people who didn't know about hospice, so I wanted to help spread awareness.
Okay, and if people are needing hospice services, is this a program of Columbia Memorial Hospital?
Yes, through the hospital you can contact Columbia Memorial Hospital to receive that care if you think that could apply to you, or you could go directly to the Lower Columbia Hospice office.
Okay, and this is a fundraising effort, and it involves Christmas ornaments?
Yeah, we have handmade hearts that were donated by a group of quilters down at Humspun Quilts who donated their time and efforts to us. But donors can donate $10, and a heart-shaped ornament will be hung on a Christmas tree in one of five locations in Clatsop County. and it will be dedicated to a person that they can indicate on the order forms, and it's just hung in honor of them.
Okay, and where can we find those trees?
We have one at Columbia Memorial. We have one at Salon Boheme in Astoria, one at U.S. Bank in Astoria, CMH Urgent Care Unit in Warrenton, and one at Columbia Bank of Seaside.
Okay, and you mentioned a $10 donation, and there is an order form. Are those available where the trees are located?
Yes, at every location there will be order forms next to the tree, and on the very front page of Columbia Memorial Hospital's website, you will find a download sheet for that order form.
Okay, and the money raised from the Hearts for Hospice program, where does that money go?
The money raised through this project will go to hospice directly. They have an emergency fund where if a patient or a patient's family is in need of care, we have a fund that we can use for anything that is needed at the time. So things come unexpectedly, so we always have that fund that we can use towards that. And it's all given directly towards hospice.
Thank you very much for Jake Jones and Naomi Kane. Thank you for working on this important project.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Next up, Food Roots is a local nonprofit organization working to develop a healthy regional food production system supporting food producers and consumers. Over the past several years, Food Roots has fostered the growth of school and community gardens, aided new farmers and value-added producers, and helped to connect customers to local growers. Now, Food Roots has begun an ambitious new farmer incubation project called North Coast Grown. Joel Karras, a Food Roots board member, is with us today to explain this new program and how they're closing in on completing the initial funding for the project. Let's jump right in with what the program is all about.
This is a really ambitious new project that we're kind of embarking on here. It's really a pretty complete farmer support program that has a lot of different elements in it.
Could you describe some of those elements?
Yeah, so basically the project is going to start with, we're going to build three 30-foot by 96-foot high tunnel hoop houses at the Port of Tillamook Bay, and that's going to be the base of the project, basically, where we kind of have the demonstration site and are doing production. And what the whole program, the whole North Coast program, is going to do is provide education and training for farmers, existing farmers and farm workers, and for new farmers, and it's going to provide access to hoop house space for farmers who need it. We're going to do on-the-job training for youth and adults at the site, and it's also going to provide a match savings program for new and existing farmers where they can save money, basically, and get a $3. For every dollar they save, they get a $3 match. And it can run from anywhere from 6 months to 3 years, and that basically is going to give them some capital for either startup costs or for new infrastructure. We're also going to create a land database of local land in the area that people, private owners, are looking to have farmed, and so we can try to match up farmers who need land to local landowners who have it and want to see crops grown on it. We also are looking to start up a tool bank to provide access to tools and implements for local farmers, and an online marketplace where local businesses or organizations that are looking for locally grown crops can kind of list their need, and local farmers can look to match it. So kind of bring those two together.
Everything from helping to serve the growers to serve the consumers on the other end.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's get back to the hoop houses. For people who don't know, what is a hoop house?
So the hoop house is basically a covered structure. It's a long tunnel with a metal frame that's covered by plastic. And what it does is it creates a little bit better of a growing environment where, one, you can keep the rain out, you can better control your moisture levels, you get a heat boost from capturing the sun's solar energy in the plastic, the greenhouse effect. So it's basically essentially a large greenhouse, but they're not going to be heated necessarily, although we have talked about the port has a manure digester on site, and so there has been talk of possibly piping some of the hot air that naturally comes out of that into one or more of the hoop houses. So, but that's still a little up in the air, and if we'll do that. But so it basically extends the growing season, and it provides an opportunity to potentially do year-round production here on the coast, which is something we can generally do in our environment, but it definitely helps if you have a hoop house.
So why did you decide to locate at the Port of Tillamook Bay?
The Port of Tillamook Bay is a pretty major partner on this project. They have a FEMA Alternative Projects grant, and so we kind of had the opportunity to partner with them, and they're going to provide 75% of the funding to build these hoop houses, and we're going to provide 25% matching funding. And so they technically are going to own the hoop houses, and then we'll have initially a six-year access to them, which kind of comes with the matching funds that we have to carry out this project. And then from that point forward, obviously, we could look to renew our agreement term.
So is this project driven from farmers from the outside, or is it more of an outreach on your part to recruit new farmers?
It is, I think the long-term plan is to kind of look to make this into a farmer incubator program where we're hoping to create new farmers, but we also absolutely want to support existing farmers. And so the education component is a big piece of that. The hoop house space, may or may not be used, leased by existing farmers. A lot of existing farmers might already have their own hoop house space, but we're still going to be providing education and training that they could take advantage of if the land database might be good for them. If they're limited in land and looking for some more to expand, you know, the tool bank, all these things are going to be available to existing farmers too. So we want to support existing farmers and help make their lives easier so they can grow food for us. And we also definitely want to bring new farmers into the fold and you know, have more farms and more farmers here on the North Coast.
Well, Food Roots has been around for a while. And could you talk a little bit about some of the other programs that Food Roots sponsors?
Yeah, we've been around 7 years, I believe. I have that right. And we have one program that I think is really great is the IDA program, which is actually the match saving program that I spoke of before, where it's a 3-to-1 match on money you save. And you do it for a set amount of time. You put in a monthly amount. You go through a business plan development process and some other education. And it's for local food businesses. So it could be a farm or it could be a food processor, value-added processor, something like that. Anyone who's working in the local food system. And anyway, you save money. You get a $3 match on what you save. And that's when you cash it out, that's just capital that you have to build your business or to get it started. So that's a really great program. We work with North Coast Food Web, and the two of us do the North Coast Food Guide, which kind of shows where the local farms are in the area and what local food is available. So that's a really good resource for local people.
Is that guide printed or on the web or both?
It's printed and... Yeah, it's printed, and I believe we're also working on an online version as well. And we also do a farm table program, which is essentially a farmer's market stand incubator program, more or less, where we have a stand at the Tillamook Farmer's Market, and North Coast Food Web does the same sort of program here at the River People's Astoria Market. Farmers or just gardeners, if you have excess produce or you're just a real small farm just getting going and you don't quite know if you have a steady enough supply to do a year-long farmer's market stand, you can sign up and come for a week, sell your produce at the table, kind of get your name out there and get in front of customers and talk to people and start building a base. And then once you feel like you've got this customer base and you've got your production down, you can then transition into doing a full-time stand if you'd like to. So that's a great program. And then a big part of what we do at Food Roots is the school and community gardens. We have a Food Corps member, and we do garden and nutrition education programs at some of the local schools. We've got 12 total community and school gardens that we've helped establish, and that gets kids connecting to food and learning about gardening and farming and increases demand for good local food. And finally, we do... low-income access programs we've helped to establish the SNAP Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program at the Tillamook and Manzanita farmers markets, and those markets, those SNAP programs also now have matches on them weekly where people can match their first $10 in tokens that they get so they can kind of double their purchasing power so that low-income people can get good food.
When you get into farming, this is a very labor-intensive business.
Yes.
And do you see younger people wanting to take up farming for a living?
I do. I see. So I've worked on, I work for two farms currently in the area, Meadow Harvest and Lance Farm Vittles, and I've worked for three vegetable farms in the past. And I've worked with a lot of young people that are really interested in farming, both young people who are doing internships on small-scale farms and woofers, willing workers on organic farms, who come in for anywhere from 2 weeks up to multiple months and work on a farm, usually just for room and board. But and not all of them are interested in farming long-term, but I've met a lot that are. But the recurring theme always is the economic challenge of it. And there's this real push between this love of farming and this desire to grow food and to live this lifestyle, and then this need to have, you know, a certain amount of money to to live, or to have health insurance, or, you know, just to get by. And so, and it doesn't always mesh. It's hard. And so I think there are a lot of young people out there who are interested in farming, and that number is growing a lot, but a lot of them just aren't in a financial or economic position to do it. The land isn't priced for farming. It's really, that's not what land is priced for the most part. The support, the institutional support is growing, but it's still not there for small farms. It's still obviously leans towards the really big players and the corporate players. And so there are young people out there who want to farm, but they need help. They need economic support. And so that's one of the reasons I'm really excited about North Coast Grown, is I think that's what we're trying to do, is to provide, you know, these economic and institutional supports to just help make local farming a little easier, because it's a real challenge. The system that works against you for the most part. And so we want to help balance that out and, you know, put some programs in place that work for you and make it easier.
Earlier you mentioned that conventional farming favors large-scale production and not the kind of community-oriented food systems that are trying to be developed here on the North Coast.
Right.
And do you find that going forward with the North Coast Grown project, that, for instance, FEMA is one of your partners? So this sounds like kind of a sea change.
Right. That is interesting. FEMA's a partner in the USDA. Their specialty crop block grant program is, we have a $100,000 grant from them, which is like is a core of this North Coast Grown part beyond the hoop houses of the goal is to increase specialty crop production here on the North Coast. So that is coming from the USDA, actually. So that's something that, including our local legislatures, fought in the farm bills to include some money to go to small scale producers, sustainable organic producers, and to try to get some of this institutional support to them, whereas it's mostly focused on the large scale players and the corporate agriculture. So that's really helpful. It's still a small part of the overall pie, but, you know, it is nice that that's out there. And if we can use some of that money to build some local infrastructure, then that's really what we have to do, especially since we don't know with the budget and the various money issues at the federal level of how long these programs will be around. So while the money's there, I want to take advantage of it and get some local infrastructure built and make it easier for local farmers, and then they can make this work at a community level.
I'm going to want to get back to the hoop houses and kind of a bridge to that goal. If we don't have to transport food for hundreds of miles and we keep it local, then that tends to help keep the cost down too.
Right, right.
And to get this thing going off the ground, you're also doing crowdfunding.
Yes, yeah. So we're doing a crowdfunding campaign. We need to, as I said earlier, we're coming up with 25% of the funds to build the hoop houses to get this whole program going. So we need, of that, we've already had some local organizations step up and provide some funding, but we're looking for about $7,000 more. Is what we need to get this whole $240,000 program going. So, awesome investment. You put in $7,000, you get a $240,000 local program. And so we're doing this through a site called Indiegogo. And what it is there's a website up, kind of has information on the campaign, and anyone can go there and can contribute money. And you have a goal set. So our goal is $7,000. And The key is you want to hit that goal. Now, with some crowdfunding, you have to hit the goal to get the money at all. If you don't hit your full amount, you don't get any of your money. Now, what we're doing through Indiegogo is a flexible funding thing where we get the money no matter what, even if we don't hit our goal, but our fees drop down quite a bit if we do hit the goal of $7,000. So we definitely want to hit it because, one, we'll get ultimately more of the money that way, and we need the $7,000 to get this program off the ground. And we're off to a really good start. We launched it about 2 weeks ago, and we've already got half of our funding goal. So awesome. We have a lot of people stepping up, a lot of community members who are putting money towards this and recognize it as a really great project here for our community. And we've got the campaign is going to run until January 31st. So we still have some more time, but I know personally, I feel like I want to get as many contributions in there before the end of the year, definitely, because I know a lot of people in January kind of, look back over their holidays and go, oh, it's time to pull back a little. So, and also, since we are a 501c3 organization, any donation is tax deductible. So also, if you're looking for some...
If you're itemizing and looking for another tax break, this might be a good one.
It's a great time of year and a great project to support.
So Indiegogo is... How do you spell that?
So Indiegogo is spelled Indiegogo. And I can give an address that you can get right to our campaign. The short and sweet address that will take you to our campaign is igg.me/@foodroots. And foodroots is all one word. So igg.me/@foodroots. And that'll take you right there. And if you have any problems, you can also go to the Foodroots website, which I should give out anyway, which is foodrootsnw, as in Northwest, foodrootsnw.org. And you can find out more about what Foodroots is doing there. And there's on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see a box with a link to that campaign. And we also have a lot of perks on the campaign, which is something you can choose to select a perk or not, but we have gift donations where you can make a donation in someone else's name. It's the holiday season after all, and we'll send them a thank you card and a packet of kale seed, of North Coast grown kale seed that I actually grew in my garden and harvested this spring. And you can also get a packet of kale seed for yourself with a donation of $25 or more. We have tickets to next year's Grow the Coast available, local food packages, a pack of Food Roots Farm and Heritage food cards. So we have some nice little perks there too. If you want to get one of those, you can. If you just want to donate without a perk, you can do that too.
This sounds like a great thing to check out in these last few days before the Christmas holiday.
Yeah.
If you happen to go over your goal, will you be able to take the proceeds, the excess proceeds, and apply them to a different project?
Yeah. So if we go over in the goal, then we can put that towards a different project. We can put the additional funding into the North Coast Grown program. As we get closer to the goal, we would love to go over our goal. and so we'll probably look at exactly where we would want to put that towards and probably put up something on the campaign site about that, about what we are looking to do if we get over 7,000. So hopefully we will. That would be great.
It sounds like you're well on your way.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, Joel, thanks very much for coming in and telling us about the North Coast Grown and more about Food Roots.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's all for today's edition of The Bridge. We welcome your comments on the show. Call us at 503-325-0010 or email to news1, that's NEWS, then the numeral 1, at KMUN.org. I'm Kathleen Morgain saying thank you for listening, and join us again next Thursday morning at 9 for more local and regional stories. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.